We'll begin today by taking another look at a political story that shocked the political world on Tuesday. We're talking about House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's loss in his party primary race to political newcomer David Brett. David Brett still has the general election to face, but there's been an immediate consequence. Leader Cantor has decided to step down early from his leadership post, setting off a fight to replace him as second in command to Speaker John Boehner. We're also wondering not just about what happened in Cantor's district, but also what effect, if any, this will have on the fate of big issues pending in the House, particularly immigration reform, which is one of the issues David Brett campaigned on. So we've called Ron Christie. He's a former assistant to Vice President Dick Cheney and President George W. Bush. He's now a Republican strategist and communications advisor. Welcome back. And he's here in Washington, D.C.
Always a pleasure
Good
to be with you.
Fernando Espuelas is host and managing editor of the Fernando Espuelas Show on Univision. He's here in Washington, D.C. as well. Welcome back to you.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
So let me start with a clip from the victory speech of David Brett, who beat Eric Cantor. Here it is.
This campaign was about just basic American values and virtues right from the beginning, and the basic premise is power belongs to the people, and that's what we're going to do.
And that power belongs to the people line was important because David Brett was considered a kind of a Tea Party favorite. But now there's this storyline emerging that the real issue really isn't any big issue of David Brett, is that Eric Cantor was deeply unpopular in his own district with his constituents who felt he'd lost touch. So the question I have, Ron Christie, is first of all, which argument do you credit? And why didn't he know that? I mean, he was vastly over, he vastly outspent David Brett. Why didn't he know he was in trouble?
Well, this race is amazing to me, Michelle, because you're looking at someone who'd amassed the better part of $5 million, and his opponent had less than $200,000. I think Eric Cantor honestly spent more time on K Street here in Washington, D.C., with the lobbyists and the special interest community, rather than Main Street back in his district, back down near Richmond, Virginia. And this really honestly doesn't surprise me all that much. There's been a rumor for several years that Cantor has lost touch with his constituents. Now, the fact that he would lose to someone who was a political unknown from Randolph-Macon College, which is not necessarily on a lot of people's radar screens, might be surprising. But again, if you spend more time with the lobbyists and the special interests and don't take care of Tip O'Neill's old adage that all politics is local, you're going to find yourself back at home.
Interestingly enough, David Brett is facing another professor from the same college in the general election. But I want to focus on immigration reform. And Fernando, this is one of the reasons we called you, is because you've been covering it very closely, speaking with people on both sides, you know, of the aisle and on all sides of the issue on your program. Some people are saying that Cantor's support for an immigration initiative, a Republican immigration initiative, cost him conservative support because David Brett then portrayed him as pro-amnesty. And this is what Eric Cantor himself had to say about this at his press conference yesterday.
So my position on immigration has not changed. It didn't change from before the election, during the election, or the way it is today. You know, I have always said the system is broken. It needs reforms. I think it is much more desirable and frankly doable if we did it one step at a time, working towards where we have common ground and believe things in common.
But do you credit that argument that this support for this Republican alternative is what cost him?
I don't really. I mean, I think it's an element of it, certainly. But I would agree with Ron that he was just so disconnected from his district. I think his disapproval ratings were in the 60s, which is not a good place to be when you're spending $5.3 million, I think it was, Ron. But look, he was never a supporter of immigration reform. Just what he said right now is nonsensical. The Senate has said over and over again, we will not consider little pieces to what is a very big problem. And I think that, that Cantor probably was trying to play with both sides. At the end of the day, my sources in Congress tell me that he was probably the biggest blockage to actually bringing a vote on the floor. And so I don't think really immigration is the main issue here.
So you don't feel the loss of his presence per se has any effect on whether this issue will proceed or not?
Well, I think it's going to be manipulated by many sides. I know the Democrats are saying it has no impact, and therefore we should just keep, you know, it will happen somehow in the next 4 weeks, which I think is rather wishful thinking. But I also think that Tea Party types will use it to frighten Republicans into saying, if you have any support for immigration reform, we will come after you. I think at the end, they're drawing the wrong lesson. They are alienating key voting groups, Hispanics principally, to such a degree that I think they're converting the National Republican Party into the California Republican Party, where there are no statewide elected officials after Governor Pete Wilson went after immigrants.
Ron Christie, what's your perspective on this?
Well, I spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill yesterday, and I think that immigration is dead this year. It's over. Because
it was anyway?
I think it was on life support before. I mean, I had members say to me yesterday, done, it's over, we're stunned, we're not going down the way that cancer went down. And I think there are two lessons to draw from this. First, I think that a lot of members of Congress right now recognize that this is going to be a very volatile election. This is no longer going to be just because incumbents are reelected with a 92% overall in their campaigns. This year is different. People are very upset about the economy. People are very upset about the seeming lack of direction in our foreign policy. And I think all the members that I've spoken to, particularly yesterday, get the feeling that they've been home for a couple of weeks with their constituents, and their constituents are angry, and they think that Washington is broken and it's not working. And I think Cantor's defeat is only one manifestation of this. I think it portends a broader trend that we're going to see in November.
If you're just joining us, we're having our political chat. Our guests are Republican strategist Ron Christie and Fernando Espuelas, host and managing editor of the Fernando Espuelas Show. Well, you know, Fernando, because, you know, you talked about the fact that this anti-immigration sentiment, mm-hmm. or at least the way it's expressed, is very mm-hmm. damaging to Republicans among key constituencies.
Sure.
But do you want to mention that, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a nominal. Well, there was a Republican. He ran as a Republican and did become governor of California, but had a very different message on that. But the fact is, you know, Latinos are not very present as a political force in a district like Eric Cantor's for all kinds of reasons.
Right.
But so if that's not the case, I mean, this may be true on a national level, but on a district-by-district level, it doesn't seem to be. I mean, do you credit Ron's perspective on this? That actually, whether you think it should matter on the substance on a granular level, it matters as these individuals look at their own individual districts and say, if that's not the sentiment of my constituents, then I'm not going to go there.
Well, I think going back to the California example, since Pete Wilson in the early 90s tried to essentially bring forth the equivalent of the Arizona anti-immigrant law, the percentage of Hispanic voters in every single election in California has increased, every single election, to the point now that you cannot be elected in California unless you carry the Hispanic vote. And I think that was a catalyst, that Pete Wilson was a catalyst. And I think when you look at the pathetic level of Hispanic registration, 40% of eligible voters not registered. I mean, it's just purely pathetic. These kinds of events are the stimuli that essentially create an electorate. And that's, frankly, what's going to happen.
Ron Christie, what lesson do you draw from, say, the Lindsey Graham example, a South Carolina senator who was perceived to be in trouble, mm-hmm. and he won his primary race also against a Tea Party opponent. So is this how do you read that? Is this an issue between, say, the difference between a congressional district and a Senate race? Is it like the bigger the canvas, the easier it is to make an argument for comprehensive reform or to take a stand on big issues? How do you interpret those very different results?
Well, I think Fernando had it right a few moments ago. Look, I think Lindsey Graham is a very good politician, both here in Washington dealing with lobbyists and special interest groups, and he's very good when he goes back at home and he deals with his constituents. So you could make the argument that Eric Cantor played and touched all the right bases here in town, but he didn't touch the most important base, which is his hometown constituents. Whereas Lindsey Graham made the sale. Lindsey Graham went home. People like Lindsey Graham. You know, there's this big cacophony here in Washington of, oh, you know, he's John McCain's sidekick and all this. But they like him in South Carolina. And his election in this primary only proves that.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about the leadership race. And I understand for a lot of people this is very arcane and kind of inside baseball stuff. But as we see, these figures do become national figures and they do have an impact. So thoughts about the scramble to replace Eric Cantor, who, as we said, is second in command to John Boehner.
Eric Cantor is the House Majority Leader. The House Majority Leader is in charge of setting not only the agenda of which bills will receive a vote on the House floor and which ones won't come to the floor, but they also really have the job of taking the pulse of the House Republican Conference now that they're in the majority. This is a very important election. I think that the odds-on favorite is Kevin McCarthy from California, who's the whip. The whip's job is to count all the votes for a very important legislation coming to the floor. But this is where I think the Tea Party could have an impact here. The Tea Party wants one of theirs at the leadership leadership table. They're not happy with John Boehner. They're not happy with Eric Cantor. And they're saying, you're not listening to us. You're not listening to our concerns. I think you might have an outside candidate, someone, a Tea Party representative, someone like Pete Sessions from Texas, someone like Jeb Hensarling from Texas, to really take a good shot at running to make sure that other voices are at John Boehner's leadership table.
And finally, Fernando, is there anybody who bridges that? You know, you're talking about the sleeping giant of the Latino vote, mm-hmm. which is certainly very present in, you know, used to be a regional vote, is now becoming a national
right.
vote. Is there somebody who bridges both the kind of the Tea Party side and also talking about bringing new voices to the table ensures that the Republican brand is not permanently damaged on the national level? Is there anybody you see in the offing in the leadership race who could do that?
Well, I mean, no, not right now. The Congress seems to me so out of whack with at least the Hispanic electorate that it's very difficult to see who that person would be. It's from, you know, bad to worse in terms of what their declarations are all about. But I, you know, I would agree. I think Lindsey Graham is someone who is a politician of integrity, and he says what he means, and he expresses it well. And so you may or may not agree with the full spectrum of his opinions, but you feel like you're talking to a real person who loves America principally and then the party.
Okay, but he's not a candidate for majority leader in the House. He's a senator.
No.
Is there anybody in the Senate, in the House?
Right. Yeah. I'm saying, who is that person in the House? I don't know that person in the House.
Well, we'll keep watching and we'll keep talking to you all about it. Thank you both so much. Fernando Espuelas is host and managing editor of The Fernando Espuelas Show on Univision. He was here with us in Washington, D.C., along with Ron Christie, former assistant to Vice President Dick Cheney and President George W. Bush, now a Republican strategist and communications advisor. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Great to be with you.